And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say?
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophet, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation, a Disney Core production, a 20th Century Fox Lucasfilm co-production, and all those other things that appear at the beginning of a show that you just want to fast forward to get to the meat. And the meat of today's episode is provided by me, Andrew Leyland, my co-hosts in crime, Mr. Sean Engel.
Hello.
And Mr. Paul Spataro.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we all today?
Doing all right.
Doing okay, because I have no synopsis to do.
So the less amount of work is now on you this week, even though none of us really do any work with regard in the synopsis.
Shh. Yes. This is all professional.
The illusion that we're doing work.
You mean the illusion that we're doing something when in fact we do very little?
Yeah, I mean, let's just go with that. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but I find that the less I do, the better I do it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Don't tell your girlfriend that. At all. At all.
She tells me that.
Oh, so what are we covering today?
An episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I think.
For the love of Christ. I was thinking, like, the title, so we could actually...
All right, I thought for a minute that you wanted to cover Beauty and the Beast or something.
Oh, God.
We were going to do a Professor Layton podcast, maybe?
All I know about Professor Layton, is he the guy who's got the video game? No, that's the one who does the objection. No, that's someone else. I don't know.
Professor Layton drew Hercules and Iron Man.
Oh, okay. That's
he did, yeah. Excellent. So we could talk about that. Or we could talk about Keeping Up with the Cardassians, mm-hmm. a reality television show in which Garak frequently shows us his bottom.
Does he really? Because I'm proud to say I've never seen that show. Is Andy Robinson on it?
Andy Robinson is on Keeping Up with the Cardassians, yes. Gul Dukat's a bastard in it. He really is.
See,
I thought maybe perhaps in the show Andy Robinson is friends with the Cardassian.
No. No, I wouldn't know. I've never seen it, but I doubt it.
See, that would be creepy if, you know, Gul Dukat was slowly going through the Bruce Jenner sort of transformation. That would just be all kinds of awkward.
Season 7.
Well, that's when we tackle the hard issues, I guess. Or, no, but yeah, we're talking about the Cardassians again. And yeah, Gul Dukat and Garak, I'm looking forward to this episode.
How can you go wrong? I mean, this is only our second Garak appearance.
Yeah, I know. You know, we're well into the second season. We haven't seen him since, like, the third episode of the show. And he made such an indelible appearance. He does such an indelible mark on the series from that point on. You would expect he'd make more appearances on the show, but it's so good to have him back. No spoilers here. Well, I guess big spoilers here. This is going to be a highly, highly lauded show this time.
Well, I don't know. I haven't given away what I think about it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I may hate it.
Uh-huh.
You contrarian, you.
I don't know. Yeah, we're gonna have to see. Hmm. But I guess before we get to that, did we have some mass media discussion to do before we get to it?
Yeah, there's a new Star Wars trailer come out by the guy who directed Star Trek, so it's tangentially linked together.
Yeah, in some way. I know Paul has been, once again, the contrarian, has not seen it, but Andy and I both have, and I think we were both taken back to our childhood, and basically, I'm so looking forward to it. Once again, it was a teaser trailer. It doesn't spoil any of the film. It's a lot of nice imagery. We're not going to spoil it for you, Paul. If you want to eventually go see it, I would recommend you do, because it's not going to tell you anything about the plot. But it had perhaps the most fantastic ending to a 90-minute or 90-second trailer I think you ever could have. That sold the movie for me. It really did. I'm more enthused to see this movie than I think anything else coming out this year. And it was that one simple trailer.
Plain, simple trailer.
Yes.
As we were discussing earlier, my media blackout is generally now what I'm trying to do is, if I already know I'm going to see the movie, I'm not going to go out of my way to see a trailer. Now, when I go see Avengers, if there's a Star Wars trailer attached to it, I'm not going to close my eyes and leave the room. I'm going to see it. But I'm not going to stream any trailer for a movie I already know I'm going to see. So, for example, I can see every trailer they put out for the Fantastic Four, because as far as I know, I'm not going to see that. But if they, Star Trek, Star Wars, Avengers, even Batman v Superman, to certain people's consternation, I don't need to see the trailers because I plan to see the movies. So I don't know if I'm going to fall miserably and start, mainlining trailers like an addict, but as of right now, I plan on trying to avoid them as much as I can.
No, for the most part, that's what I do. If I'm going to see the film, I don't bother watching the trailers. So as of this recording, I have not seen a single minute of footage of the Avengers, apart from the other night there was an advert in the middle of something we were watching on TV, but they didn't actually play any audio. They were plugging something that it must be advertised with, like a McDonald's tie-in or something. So although I've now seen little bits, I've still not heard anything. So I'm going to that. But with Star Wars, I couldn't resist with Star Wars. It's because it's Star Wars, so I couldn't not watch it.
But Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. You would think that we were trying to avoid this episode when we really aren't. Okay.
Yes, Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
When the war is over, hatred may be all that remains.
You are a Cardassian butcher.
And prejudice can last a lifetime.
Cardassians are suggesting that the Bajorans are raising these orphans to hate their own people.
In matters of politics and power.
I was ordered to leave them behind.
Children may be the silent victims.
We torture for that boy living like that.
Have you come to take us back to Cardassia?
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
See there, I've given you somewhere you can edit it. I'm clever, me. Cardassians was written by James Crocker for a story by Gene Woland and John Wright. It was directed by Cliff Bowle. The synopsis this time comes from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry J. Oardman and Paula M. Block, because I am a lazy bastard and can't actually be bothered writing my own. Stardate 47177.2. Enjoying another cup of Tarkalian tea with Garrick, the station's tailor, Bashir idly fishes for clues to the Cardassians' true vocation, to no avail. Their attention is drawn to two new arrivals at the Replimat, a middle-aged Bajoran man and a 12-year-old Cardassian boy. Curious about this atypical pair, Garrick approaches and begins speaking to the Bajoran, at the same time laying a friendly hand on the boy's shoulder. The boy responds fearfully, viciously biting Garrick's hand. Later, as Bashir relates the strange incident to the crew in Ops, Sisko is contacted by Gul Dukat, who has already heard about the encounter. Dukat claims to be concerned about the treatment of the boy, a war orphan raised by a Bajoran family, and asks the commander to investigate. The information, he says, may help in his effort to bring such orphans back home to Cardassia. Sisko agrees and begins by speaking to Proker, the boy's adoptive father. Proker tells him that while he has not raised the child to hate Cardassians, he has told him the truth about what they did to Bajor. As for himself, Proker no longer sees the boy named Rugal as a Cardassian. He loves him as if he were his own. But Proker's words are contradicted by an alien named Zolan, who claims that Rugal's Bajoran parents are abusive and that they consider their treatment of the boy to be their revenge against all Cardassians. Although Proker denies the charge, Sisko insists the boy be kept in protective custody until the truth is revealed, and he places Rugal with the station school teacher, Keiko O'Brien. Garak reacts oddly when Bashir tells him about Dukat's alleged efforts to help the Cardassian war orphans left behind on Bajor. He points out the incongruity of Dukat's involvement in a situation the Gull himself helped to create when he was in charge of the Cardassian withdrawal from Bajor. Bashir heads immediately to Sisko and finds him in the midst of a conversation with Gul Dukat about returning Rugal to Cardassia. Bashir boldly interrupts and questions Dukat about the decision to leave the war orphans on Bajor. Dukat explains that the decision was made by Cardassia's civilian leaders and that he was forced to comply. Uncertain who to believe, Sisko questions Garak, who denies making any allegations about Dukat. That night, Bashir is awakened by Garak, who says they must go to Bajor immediately. Bashir approaches Sisko for permission to borrow a runabout, just as the commander receives another interesting communique from Gul Dukat. Dukat says he has discovered that Rugal is the son of one of Cardassia's most prominent politicians, Khotran Padur, and that Padur is en route to the station to reclaim the boy. Realizing that Garak's sudden desire to go to Bajor is more than a coincidence, Sisko allows Bashir to take the runabout. On Bajor, Garak leads Bashir to an orphan resettlement center, where they are allowed to download the relocation records for thousands of children. As they return to the station, a suspicious Bashir questions Garak about what is going on. Garak points out that Padur was one of the civilian leaders who ordered the evacuation of Bajor that caused Dukat to lose his job as prefect. The fact that Dukat is now leading an effort to reunite Padur with his son seems an odd coincidence. When Padur arrives to meet his son, Chief O'Brien warns him that the boy has strong negative feelings about Cardassians, and sure enough, Rugal angrily denies that Padur is his father and refuses to go with him to Cardassia. What's more, Proker refuses to relinquish custody. But, despite the fact that bringing the Bajoran-raised child home after giving him up for dead will expose Padur to public disgrace, he wants Rugal. The two fathers agree to allow Sisko to serve as an arbiter in the matter. Before the hearing can begin, Dukat shows up at the station, and Sisko realizes they are all being manipulated to an unknown end. But he can prove nothing until Garak analyzes the resettlement files and finds a clue that unravels the mystery. Bashir presents their findings at the hearing. Rugal was originally brought to the resettlement center by an officer who was attached to Terek Noir, the Cardassian name for Deep Space Nine, and, at that time, Terek Noir was under the command of Gul Dukat. The clear implication is that Rugal was separated from his father by a political enemy who hoped someday to humiliate Padur. With the knowledge that both Padur and Rugal were the victims of a cruel conspiracy, Sisko knows that he has no choice but to separate the boy from his loving Bajoran parents and send him home to Cardassia with his real father. The end.
Nice. Who wants to go first?
It took me a long time to write that, I'll have you know.
Yes. Yes, it did.
It took me an even longer time to read it.
So who wants to go first on this? Anyone should go first.
Okay, seeing as I did all the reading. With the exception of the rather dubious ending, where I really didn't agree with Sisko's decision at all, this was really rather very, 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 very good. You know, Andy Robinson just lights up the screen whenever he's there anyway. And he's just magnificent as Garak. It's always nice to see Gul Dukat, even if he was a little bit, defeated again at the end when he stomps off in a big strop. But the episode was brilliant. Alexander Siddig, or whatever name he's going by at the minute, was really good in this one as Dr. Bashir. Sisko's magnificent in this episode. Mm-hmm. There are two particularly brilliant scenes. The one where Bashir interrupts him talking to Gul Dukat, and the one where he goes to him in the middle of the night to ask for a runabout are just magnificently played by Avery Brooks. My only issue with this is, where the hell was Kira?
Yeah, yeah. You would think she'd have some real input into giving to this. Yeah. Considering the subject matter.
Yeah, and it just felt like Nana Visitor was given a week off because she'd done all the heavy lifting on the three-part opener.
Yeah, she only really showed up at the beginning in Ops to, to basically say the whole thing about the war orphans being left on Bajor was a big problem. And then after that, you know, she had a couple of minor scenes where she smiled at Dr. Bashir being awkwardly, you know, dressed down by Sisko, and that was about it. Yeah, it was nice that Bashir had more of an attempt to show how well he could act in this show, because like I've said in prior episodes, he's been woefully bad in some of these, and he actually gets a chance to shine this time out. The scenes where he interrupts Sisko the two times, it allows Avery Brooks to just completely be a sarcastic ass to him, and I love that. And this was a great episode. It keeps cementing the idea that the Cardassians in Next Generation are some of the best villains in Star Trek. The Klingons, they're kind of one note. They're all honor and fighting and everything, but the Cardassians are so duplicitous and double-sided and underhanded, and you never know what they're trying to do. The fact that Gul Dukat set this thing up 8 years in advance, that this little plan that he had happening was going to catch this guy after 8 years, was just shows you the level of planning and forethought and manipulation that they put into these dastardly doings. I love the Cardassians of characters on the show.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, so I just won't say anything. Yeah, I thought the one, just to go back to what you talked about, the one weakness to the episode was, I mean, it wasn't the fact that Sisko made a decision we disagree with, because that, you know, that can happen. The weakness was that they didn't focus at all on the pain that this adoptive family had to be going through with it, and they really didn't give you their point of view at all, that, you know, that they've grown to love this boy and that he's part of their family and he's being taken from them. This could have easily been a two-part episode if you had an audience willing to watch an episode that wasn't all that action-heavy and just, you know, full with drama and political intrigue and just, you know, emotional ups and downs. But it really got me thinking, which I think when Star Trek is at its best, it gets you thinking without knocking you over the head with the fact that they're doing it. But just thinking about war orphans and that circumstance and how that occurs, and then to think about how somebody's manipulating that for their own political benefit, it really just hits so many quality notes that I was busy multitasking, which I often do, when I watch this episode, and I had to stop what I was doing to start, you know, really focusing on this episode instead. You know, just to give you my situation is, if I'm watching at night and I focus on the episode alone, there's a good chance I may doze off because I'm old. So I'll often multitask just to keep from falling asleep. In this instance, it was totally unnecessary because the episode was very stimulating, despite, you know, somewhat of a lack of action to it.
You don't miss action on Deep Space Nine when the characters are well written and the actors are doing their job brilliantly, and it's almost perfect as to where the show will go. And I think you're right. I think if they'd done this show in later seasons, it may have been a subplot that carried over a couple of episodes rather than just being handled in one. And yet, my only bum note is, it's not so much that I did disagree with his decision. It's that it was a very pat wrap up. And you're right, we do keep saying as it goes along, it will stop being pat and convenient. And like Paul just said, if this had been in season 3 or 4, they probably would have carried this on for 2 or 3 episodes.
I think it would have been well served, because it really is a powerful story. And you know, hats off to the young fella that played the
Rugel,
yeah. I mean, he did a nice job in the acting of it. I thought he portrayed the character well. I don't think he was over the top. He never fell into stereotype. Just really well done, well written and well acted all around.
Yeah, there.
Sorry,
Paul.
And I was just gonna say, and I agree that you know, we're finally getting to see a non-jerk Bashir. So that's nice, because he's been truly annoying through season one.
Yeah, we're finally getting that. And we're getting, you know, we also get a kind of nice story arc, I thought, with Chief O'Brien as well. As we had seen on episodes of The Next Generation, O'Brien has a big thing with the Cardassians. And the scene where they're having dinner, you know, with Rugal, and Keiko has sort of said, oh, well, I made this Cardassian dish for you to try in hopes that, you know, he'd be getting acclimated back to his sort of Cardassian upbringing, or not his Cardassian, but, you know, he'd get a taste of what it'd be like to be Cardassian. And both O'Brien and Rugal push the bowl away at the same time until it hits in the middle. It's a really great scene, and there's a lot of issues that get touched on in this story. You know, the idea of, you know, what happens versus nature versus nurture. Are you the person that you grow up to be, or is it in your genetics that this is the person you're going to be? There were some ideas about indoctrination. At the beginning, you kind of may have thought that the family may have been indoctrinating the child to hate who he was. In fact, there was a line that Rugal delivered that said, you know, I wish I wasn't a Cardassian. And that kind of comes into play with, you know, that could come into play with various other feelings of being different, whether that be, you know, your orientation, or whether it be, you know, your upbringing, your race, or anything. It's these heady ideas that Deep Space Nine is able to tackle, and tackle well, that makes this show such a really compelling one to watch.
Yeah, I love the O'Brien scene, because not only is it a callback to an episode of Next Generation with Bob Gunton in it about O'Brien's time during fighting the Cardassians, there's an inherent racism to O'Brien in that scene that's brilliant, because he still is carrying that baggage of that war with him, even though he would deny it. And I like that. That's a nice little character out, that not everyone on Deep Space Nine's perfect, that, you know, Picard got bogeyfied but then forgave them straight away. O'Brien's still carrying that residual hatred to Cardassians with him, and I think that's great. I think it's true to life.
I think you also had, and I don't know if you guys quote this the way I did, or if maybe I'm wrong, but I also thought you had something that's really food for thought on Keiko O'Brien's actions there, because I think she was guilty of something that I am occasionally guilty of, in wanting to be sensitive racially and politically correct. Sometimes people go too far.
Yes.
And they try to do things that are you know, and it almost comes down to, it almost seems like pandering once you come down to it. And it's something I never want to be guilty of, and I think I occasionally have without meaning to. And it's the, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions kind of thought.
Exactly.
But yeah, I don't think she made the Cardassian food because she thought, you know, let me expose him to the culture that he didn't see. I think she just assumed he's a Cardassian, he must like this food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she was guilty of being insensitive, because he's never been exposed to this food.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point there, Paul. Yeah, and it was a great scene that initially when O'Brien made these comments about Rugal being there, the very obviously racist comments, eventually when he sits down with Rugal and he gets to talking with him, he comes to realize that, yeah, there's been some Cardassians that I didn't like, but there's been some that I do, like you. And he comes to the real, they both come to the realization that you can't hate an entire race simply because of one factor. You can't damn everyone simply because you have a dislike of a certain person. There are always good people, and there will always be bad people, regardless of, you know, what race, what gender, what ethnicity they are. And it's these issues that the show is able to tackle like this that, again, is why I love watching Deep Space Nine.
I had read not that long ago, there's an article, or a, you know, a pamphlet, or whatever you want to call it, out there, written by somebody, and it's called 15 significant mistakes made by people trying to be sensitive, or something along those lines. I'm totally mischaracterizing the name, but you know what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
And they talked about people who, you know, people who say things like, one of the things they said, like the people say often that that's not, you know, that, that people who are in the minority don't like to hear is, when I look at you, I don't even see color. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, you know, and they, like, it would had a list of a bunch of things like that that people frequently say in an effort to be sensitive and aren't. And then it would have an explanation as to why that is a little bit offensive just the same. And it was very, I found it very interesting and eye-opening to read it. And that's what gives me the thought process that I'm saying that even, you know, that I've probably made some mistakes over the years in trying to be the right way. But I just, like, watching Keiko O'Brien's behavior and even a little bit of Miles O'Brien, that's what it had me thinking of. You know, they're trying so hard to be welcoming to this kid and to be making him feel like he belongs that they were doing just the opposite on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Pointing out to him how he is different, you know?
Yeah.
Well, but
and it ties into the episode that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. People live with people. Governments don't live with people. It ties into that. And you know what I really did like about this one? We never find out for definite whether that kid is being abused by his Bajoran adoptive parent.
Yeah, because
I always felt throughout it that, yeah, I mean, you never find out for definite, but I always felt throughout it that he is not.
No, I felt that as well, because the guy who grasses him up is obviously a Gul Dukat plant. But there is enough timidity to him that does come with somebody who is being abused. And I did think that was, it was either a subtle acting choice or it was in the script, but I thought that was nice. But again, it plays into Deep Space Nine's ambiguity.
And if you, if you took this a lot. If you took this as a true, you know, true story, and you take this young boy who was adopted when he was whatever, a year old, six months old, and brought, you know, and kept on Bajor when the Cardassians left, just in dealing with other people, even considering himself to be a full Bajoran and hating the Cardassians, he's probably been exposed to so much initial dislike or you know, hatred for what he is that you would see him, I mean, you could see him being kind of shell-shocked even under the best of circumstances. I don't think he has to have been beaten to have created that.
I agree entirely. I just thought it added a nice level, another level to an episode that was just teeming with lots of little subtle levels.
And that's the only that's the aspect of Sisko's decision that I can say, okay, I can accept that. Because if he does assimilate into the Cardassian culture, at least now he'll be accepted and he can live a much more normal life at that point. And that's the one aspect of it that I can kind of justify the decision on.
But could he be the next generation of Cardassia accepting the Bajorans? Will he be the bridge between those two people as he gets older?
Well, I mean, that's I think that's a lofty hope, though, for one guy. And especially for a 12-year-old to kind of put that on his shoulders. But certainly in a perfect world, that's what you would hope for.
Deep Space Nine don't do perfect worlds, sadly. Andy Robinson, from the middle of the episode, where he starts figuring it all out, to when Gul Dukat comes on the station, and it's on, honestly, I've got to point this out, my wife pointed this out, not me, watch Robinson. All the way through those scenes, he's just watching Gul Dukat, and smiling, because he knows that everything he says is just leading to his downfall. And it was Angela who pointed that out. She said, watch Garrett, what he's doing. He's just watching Dukat all the way through this, letting him dig himself a hole. And it's brilliant to watch, because he's just so smug throughout the entire bit. It's brilliant. But Mark Alamo's brilliant in this one, because he lays that, oh, I'm here for the war orphans, and I feel so bad for what happened to them. He's laying that on so thick in the early part of the episode, and Sisko's just got that, oh, please, expression on his face.
Yeah, Mark Alamo does a great job throughout the interrogation scene at the end. I agree with you. Garrick in the background, Andy Robinson in the background, is not saying a word, but he is saying so much with just the expression on his face and his eyes, the way he's looking back and forth, and the way he subtly smiles when Bashir will make these little statements that'll just get underneath the skin of Andrew Robinson as Dukat. It's great acting turns by everyone. It's subtle by Garrick. And a lot of times in sci-fi shows, you don't get this kind of subtlety, and it's great to see. And once again, it's why I love the Cardassians as these villainous characters. And the more we can have of Garrick and Gul Dukat on the show, I think the more I will enjoy it.
Yeah, if you like good acting and good, well-written stories, I guess.
Yeah, well, we could. You know, we could forego that and move on to the next episode, I guess.
Let's talk about the two scenes with Bashir and Sisko, because they are absolutely brilliant. Bashir just comes barging in when Sisko's talking to Dukat, and he pisses Dukat off. And Sisko's line to him is brilliant. Oh, don't apologize. It was the highlight of my day. Don't ever do it again.
Yeah.
And I also love how Dukat's, you know, like, and you're Dr. Bashir? Like, who are you, you insignificant toad?
Who is you to be talking to me?
Exactly. You know, like I said, the performances are just great. And go ahead and talk about the scene where Bashir wakes Sisko up in the middle of the night
and says, can I borrow a runabout? And Sisko, I can't remember exactly what he says, but he says something like, so you want to borrow a runabout to go to Bajor because the station's tailor has told you that there may be something happening there, but he won't tell you exactly what it is that's going on. Okay, yeah, fine. Go for your life.
and he was like, are you sure you just need one? And he was just so sarcastic, and I loved him. It was Avery Brooks when he does that sort of deadpan sarcastic, you know, just dressing down Bashir is just wonderful to watch.
And we've killed the conversation by talking about what Avery Brooks was in this one. Oh, but I think also I do think we need to redress the balance with regards to Bashir, because we have been very, very cruel to his performance in season one, justifiably so in a lot of cases. But in this one, he's really good because he's been led as a naive fool by the nose by Garrick throughout most of the episode. Garrick basically manipulates Bashir into doing everything he wants to do. But Bashir learns some interesting things as he goes along, and it's another step on the road to him becoming a likable and fully rounded character.
Mm-hmm. He will continue to be manipulated throughout the series, not to talk too much about what's going on, but as he becomes a likable character, he is still manipulated, not only by Garrick, but also by what's his name from Area? I don't know.
The covert Area 37
31.
Yeah.
So he eventually kind of turns the tables a little bit, but he's going to get manipulated way. We'll see him get manipulated a lot more before this series is over.
Yeah, but the thing is, Garrick's just such a master manipulator.
Well, and I think Bashir shines so well in this episode because he's having to play up against Andrew Robinson, who is this very deceitful, very underhanded, you're really not certain what type of character he is, and that forces Bashir, or forces Siddiq El-Fadil, or whatever he's called, you know, to actually up his game. So it's kind of one of those things, when you're acting with someone who's bringing a good performance, you need to bring as good a performance to make it all work. And again, Bashir getting to play off Andrew Robinson was great.
And as he gets manipulated, I think he becomes a more sympathetic character too, less that smarmy egotist that we've seen in the first season, because a lot of the manipulations are so well written that you start saying, well, in the same situation, I'd probably get manipulated too. And I really like that aspect of it. It's not where you're sitting there saying, oh, Bashir, you're such an idiot, why are you listening to this guy? You know, Garrick is such a compelling character, and his manipulations are so well thought out that you really don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah, that's the thing. At the end of this episode, you don't know what Garrick's intentions were. you're still left up in the air. Was he doing this to further himself? Was he doing this to get back at Gul Dukat? Was he doing this to actually bring forth the idea that there are orphans on the planet Bajor and to try and bring them back home to Cardassia? You don't know, and that's what's so great about it. It's all this shades of gray. It's all this underhanded dealings, and it's what like I said, it's what makes the Cardassians the best villains in Star Trek, specifically the Next Generation.
And when that's going on, Bashir actually becomes our point of view character, which makes him sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were very wise to change that focus a little bit on him and go come off of the pompous wannabe ladies man kind of thing and you know move him over to somebody who's trying to do good things but is a little naive.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the ending then. Is the ending assuming that the biological parents' desire for the child take precedent over the adoptive parents? Or is Sisko going with the idea that the adoptive parents have essentially taught this child to hate his own race, and therefore he would be better with his real people, his real father?
Difficult to say, because he never actually gives his reasoning.
No, it's done off panel, isn't it? It's done off screen. Which is, again, my other problem with it. Because we do have evidence in life of sometimes the wishes of the biological parents aren't necessarily what's right for the child. But the flip side of that, that this Bajoran family have taught him to hate his own people. So it's not an easy decision that Sisko has to make. And the fact that it is just thrown away at the end does kind of spoil the episode. Even though I acknowledge that's not really what this is about. It's more about Garak and Dukat, really.
Yeah, I think you'd have to go with the thought that Sisko feels this is what's in the best interest of the child, as opposed to the best interest of either the parents or the adoptive parents. I think if you were going with what's in the best interest of the parents, you'd probably go the other way and say, you know what, the parents who've raised him for 11 years are the ones who've earned the right to keep this child. But again, I'm going a little bit with the thought that he thinks ultimately, once he gets assimilated to the Cardassian culture, life will be easier for him on Cardassia. And also the, you know, which I hadn't really thought of before we started speaking, but maybe the thought that if he turns out to be an exceptional grown up once he gets there, maybe he'll be somebody who can help bridge the gap and heal some of the wounds between the two cultures. Maybe having lived 12 years in Bajoran culture and then living, say, an additional 12 years in Cardassian culture, and then in his mid-20s will say, I understand both ways of life and you both misunderstand each other. Maybe he'd be the person who could do that. I think it's a lofty goal to put on a 12-year-old, but it's more likely to happen if he goes to Cardassia than it is to go if he goes back to Bajor.
So is Sisko choosing the lesser wrong decision?
Oh, honestly, that's a given. I don't think there is a right decision.
Mm-hmm. It approaches on the idea of which is better for the child. Is it the people who brought you up, the people who have nurtured you, or is it your genetic parents? Is it the people who is, you know, who you're a part of nature? And you could possibly say that him being on Cardassia, he's not going to be exposed to the sort of, for lack of a better word, to the racism that he's going to feel from people, from Bajoran people who are going to look at him and see a Cardassian and see him as one of the race of the people who oppressed them and killed the members of their families. So you might think him not being on Bajor may be better for him. But that's, again, it's that sort of that grayness of both of either choice. It's what makes it such an interesting idea to think about.
I just wish they'd spent a little bit more time on that.
Yeah, it did seem kind of just shoehorned in the end. It's kind of like a Fantastic Four comic, you know, at the end it's suddenly, oh, we've got to wrap it up, we've got, you know, one page left, oh, sorry.
I always just, whenever we talk about the ending like that, I always hear the music at the end of Police Squad.
Am I going to have to put that again? No, I'm going to have to put that in again. Everyone just freeze.
Up to you, Mr. Editor.
And pour coffee on yourself.
I don't know. Do we have anything more?
No, that's pretty much it.
No, I think we covered this. This was really good. Really, really good.
I agree. This was one of the ones, if we were setting aside, and you will hear the contrast to this on our next episode. If we were setting aside the best episode so far, this one would be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion. I don't want to speak for my my fellow podcasters. I'll allow you to give your own opinions.
Now, even though I watched this twice and I just got so engrossed that I didn't even check the second time through, did anyone see Morn in this episode?
No. I did not.
I did not see Morn in this episode.
Okay, well, we will count this as a no Morn episode then.
Which makes me very sad.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go ahead and throw out rankings. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Our episode synopsizer is always...
Yeah, I'll go first because I synopsed it. 4. Despite the problems with the ending and the ending being rushed, Robinson, Alamo, and Fadil are brilliant. And Avery Brooks just steals the show, even though he's not in it much. And when you can steal a show away from Andy Robinson, you're doing something right.
All right. I'm going to go, and I'm going to say 4.5, because I just think it was an excellent, thought-provoking episode. I think it may have benefited from stretching it out more, which is something that... the criticism I don't have of too many of the episodes that we've done, but I think it was just so well done. Again, it made me stop what I was doing and really focus on it. So I'm going to say this is one of the best episodes I've seen so far and go 4.5.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. I'm going to go 4.5 as well. Yes, the ending did have some problems. It would have bettered the episode if they could have actually given a reason for why they're going to send Rugal to Cardassia, but the performances by Gul Dukat, by Andrew Robinson, by Mark Alamo, by Avery Brooks, and even by Siddig El-Fadil or Alexander Siddig were all spectacular. You know, even the O'Briens in there and their story arc, you know, sort of coming, you know, Chief O'Brien coming from that sort of, you know, all Cardassians are bad, to suddenly coming to connect with this boy and actually feel his problems. It just shows what a great ensemble cast, and once again, what great characters the Cardassians are. Can't stress that enough. 4.5.
All right. Do we have any mail to do before we close out this episode?
Incoming transmission.
Yeah, we've got a quick email here from Ben Perlman. Do you want me to go ahead and read that?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. This one is from Ben Perlman. He writes in to the show saying hello and thank you. He says, hello, Deep Space Niner podcasters. My name's Ben Perlman. Mr. Engel might remember me as being a faithful listener to such podcasts as Who True Freaks, Parallel Lines, and Just One of the Guys. That one I write into occasionally. Yes, I know that, Ben. Thank you for writing in. I want to let you all know that I always listen to the Prophets and to say thank you for doing the podcast. Well, you're very welcome, Ben. I've always enjoyed watching DS9 episodes, sometimes more than TNG. The fact that TNG is constantly being aired while DS9 is not only increases that fact. When DS9 originally aired, my friends would always tell me I was wasting my time watching such a horrible show, but that didn't stop me, but it left me with no one to discuss it. I really appreciate the podcast, for it shows me that others enjoyed the show as well, and now being older, along with listening to your insights, makes the show even more enjoyable to watch. In your recently posted episode talking about The Forsaken, I believe it was Mr. Engel who mentioned that the episode when Odo was tortured by being forced to stay in his humanoid form by a Cardassian, but couldn't remember who it was. In case you didn't find out, it took place in the Season 3 episode, The Die is Cast, and it was Garak who was doing the torturing and regretted it after, using a Cardassian device created to prevent shapeshifters from shifting. Since you only discussed that Odo's skin was melting and asked why it didn't affect his uniform, I found that Memory Alpha had some details on how Odo's powers work. And this obviously comes from Memory Alpha. It says, Odo did not wear real clothes, instead creating his uniform from his body. Despite his difficulties imitating certain humanoid features, he was skilled enough as a shapeshifter to imitate some technological devices well enough for them to be functional, including his comm badge on his uniform. Now, do we buy that?
No.
You know, even though that comes from Memory Alpha, yeah, I kind of... The fact that he can't make a proper nose or eyebrows or anything like that.
Yeah, but he can perfectly mimic the way cloth crumples when he sits down. No. Mm-hmm.
And that he can also create a comm badge, which is completely functional and works on whatever subspace frequencies that Starfleet or the Federation or the Bajorans use. Yeah. Sorry, Memory Alpha. Don't buy it.
No, not at all. I'm not giving you a no prize for that explanation.
Sorry. Going back to the email, it says, so Odo's uniform not melting was just a cost-saving measure. Odo's requirement to revert to liquid form every 16 hours was brought up, and whether it was every 16 hours or 16 hours from the last time he reverted. The answer I always went by, and I don't know if I ever saw that I'm incorrect, is that the 16 hours, and he thought it used to be 18, started from the last time he reverted. If he was solid for 10 hours, then he rested, the 16 hours would start over again. I explained this to similar how the Green Lantern power ring used to work in the pre-Kyle Rayner era. When Green Lantern charged his ring, the charge lasted 24 hours, using Earth terms, and if he recharged it, say, 12 hours into the 24, the 24 hours started once again at that point. He says, I look forward to many more episodes, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thank you again, Ben Perlman. Well, thank you, Ben, for writing in. I really appreciate that, clearing some things up. But yeah, then again, I have to call BS as well on the whole him forming the comm badge out of his own body. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's it for emails. We're going to save some of the other more amusing emails, I think, for the next show, because we may be needing them.
We may be depressed when we do the next show.
Yeah. Andy?
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Oh, who gives a shit? We're going to be bored stiff.
It's no Jaws, definitely.
It really isn't.
All right, well... Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you all next time. Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
going, guys.
Okay.
It's going. It's very early.
You know, we always start out these conversations like this.
Should we do the crap episode first? Very early.
What's that?
Sorry?
We should do the crap episode first while you're too tired to cur.
No, I think if we did the crap episode first, we literally wouldn't care and we'd have a 5-minute episode.
Yeah. Well, if you're ready to start,
You have the first one, don't you, Sean?
No, I've got Melora. Shut up.
So am I Cardassians?
Yes, you're Cardassians.
Okay.
You can go bite me. Luckily, I didn't have to do anything and just read it from the book, so I'm fine.
Even that's painful. Go ahead. You know what? I'm in a good mood now. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I got to treat Sean like my Dr. Bill. Hooray.
I guess, somewhere deep inside, I think I'm a nice guy, and then I think I betray that.
Okay, I'm ready. All right, well, okay, wait, just one second. Let me make sure that...
Strange usage of the word ready that I wasn't previously...
Yeah, I'm ready, but I'm not.
The ever-changing definition of literal.
I was literally so tired I couldn't get up. No,
I
you weren't.
Hate that literally can now mean figuratively.
Yes.
Yes, I'm right there with you.
That really bothers me. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be bothered over something like the definition of a word, but how can you use the word to mean what it means and the opposite? Oh God.
It's laziness of the English language. You know
it's laziness of us.
It's the whoever polices the English language, whoever that is, giving in to the stupidity of people who can't figure out the definition.
All right, everything is recording, so we're good to go.
Is anybody bringing us in?
Who's doing the intro?
I thought the person who did the synopsis does the intro.
Oh, so that's me then, right? Okay.
24 f***ing episodes in.
Yeah, that would be me.
I swear, we are so bad at this.
Oh, we suck.
You're going to alienate our listener.